Hello and welcome to another episode of the Three Bid League podcast. As always, I am Tyler. Matt, it was kind of a slow week in the conference. Some interesting games, but no great barn burners that we'll remember for the rest of our lives. And so my mind started to wander as we prepared for this podcast about a potential idea for the A10's TV future. Should the A10 implement flex scheduling like they do for Sunday Night Football? So that in the future, when St. Joe's and VCU is on national TV on a Tuesday night, the conference can decide to move that game and schedule one of the Wednesday games for that national TV spot instead.
Yeah, I think I know what you're referring to also with the Richmond-Dayton game getting talked about all over the Twitterverse, being on ESPN+, which was quite a shame because that was set to be a great game. I wish they could do something like that. I don't see it happening because I don't think mid-major TV contracts are really that. I just don't think they're able to make changes like that on the fly, and I just don't think they care enough, frankly. But that would be a good idea, and it definitely would have been helpful this week.
That one's not even flex scheduling because you wouldn't even have to change the game times.
Well, you just put George Mason on the
bus. Put the cameras and the announcers in a different spot.
Right. No, that would have been nice this week. Although I do want to say, I mean, you mentioned it wasn't a super consequential week in the A10. I do want to say, like, as we're getting almost halfway through the conference season, I can just tell watching the games on Saturday, tensions are getting high in the A10. Chris Mooney and Anthony Grant both got teed up in the Dayton-Richmond game we mentioned. Ashley Howard got a technical foul in the VCU game. And then both coaches and players just on both sides in the Rhode Island-St. Bonaventure game. That was a really poorly officiated game, kind of on both ends of the court. So at least we're seeing some passion out there, even though maybe we didn't have a ton of great games out there, but it's just good to see that. I mean, as we are, I mean, every team's played 7 games now, so we're starting to see a little bit of separation, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah, and Anthony Grant's technical fouls are just truly a remarkable thing. He is the master of the magic word. I don't think I've ever seen him get teed up for laying into a ref for too long. If he gets a tee, it's because he looks at him, he says 4 words, and he just gets slapped with it immediately. And by the way, that was the right play to do it because, God, that call was awful.
Yeah, Grant.
Three Landers didn't move.
No. No, that was just your classic, like, Kendall Pollard screen where you just lay someone out and, I mean, that's the Richmond guys. They need to call that out for Gustafson because he got laid out there. But yeah, you're right about Grant. I mean, he doesn't waste any time. He lets the referee know exactly what he's thinking. And, you know, before the season, one of my over-unders was 1.5 technical fouls for Anthony Grant. So that's his first one. I don't know if we'll see another one or not. I mean, I feel like we won't because Anthony Grant hasn't had too many reasons to be upset this season with Dayton playing so well, but I am glad we finally got one. It came in a pretty good time because Dayton had a pretty comfortable lead with just a few minutes to go, although the momentum was going toward Richmond. I did get a little bit nervous there, as I always do, but yeah, good to see the coach get fired up there.
Yeah, and if anybody should have been magic wording, it should have been Andre Gustafson. If I was him, I'd get up and just walk down the court and just start yelling at my teammates. Like, Trey Landers has a brother who played defensive line for Ohio State.
I've never heard that. Where did you hear that?
I think it was on one of the broadcasts. One of these great announcers figured it out.
One of these, but yeah.
That was going to hurt whether it was a foul or not. And somebody needs to, I don't know, warn Andre Gustafson, who is not exactly like, he's not Dwayne The Rock Johnson body-wise. I can say that much. Like, that could have caused permanent damage to that poor man. So somebody's got to call that out. He's got to be able to avoid that.
Yeah.
And then, you know what? Anthony Grant, good for you. I'm glad that he chose to take that technical there because it was a perfect moment.
Yeah, and then just one more thing on that play. Is Trey Landers one of the worst people to run into on a screen in the A10? Like, the only other guy coming to mind right now, I mean, I wouldn't want to run into Hassan French, but Trey Landers, like, that's
Corey Douglas.
Yeah, him too. I mean, those are just some of the last guys you'd want to just run into full speed when you can't see them coming, and that's rough. But one more technical foul, too, we need to bring up from that game. Richmond was hanging around. They were making a couple threes, and Dayton was responding with free throws. But Nick Sherrod, unfortunately, had the first Chris Webber moment I've seen this season, which we don't see that much. That's actually one of the first I can ever remember seeing in an A-10 game. That was too bad because Sherrod was having a really good game, but I thought that was pretty funny, something we need to bring up, and it can happen. It's a good thing it wasn't in the Final Four, I guess.
Yeah, and in hindsight, there's a decent chance that that cost them the cover.
That the gamblers were stressed out because Richmond also... So I think it was in hand because I think Dayton was a 6.5-point favorite, and they were up by 7. But Richmond intentionally fouled with 0.6 seconds to go. So if somebody like maybe did a teaser or if they got Richmond plus 7, man, that's just a terrible beat. I don't know how many people that affected, but for the number crunchers, that game really came down to the wire.
So two things real quick. If anyone would have teased it, they would have covered anyway.
Yeah, you're right. Minimum, I have that backwards.
Minimum would have been 10.5. And then... I guess really what I was kind of thinking down the stretch of that game is everyone was so worried that Richmond was going to backdoor. Once everyone starts to panic as they all stare at the potential backdoor, doesn't that just mean it's not going to happen? Like, backdoors sneak up on you. Everyone who gambled on Dayton in that game was freaking out on Twitter with 2.5 minutes left.
Yeah, I just think Dayton fans have seen it too many times where the Flyers have a comfortable lead. I mean, they were up, I don't know, like 20 points. And that's just kind of what's happened all year, where it's a close game for a while in the first half, and then all of a sudden Dayton just goes way ahead. But we've just seen it so many times where they kind of stumble down the stretch and just make things harder on themselves. I do think that happened a little bit more under Archie Miller. I don't know what your opinion is there, but I don't know. Dayton fans just... We have enough history with our team to be nervous about those sort of things.
So from a basketball standpoint in this game, the most important thing to talk about is that Dayton, as they do every single game now, just went on their incredible offensive assault. They were up 33-30 as we went to the under 4 media timeout in the first half. And in a blink of an eye, about halfway through the second half, they were up by 20. And they just continue to do this over and over again. It's not even right to say because it's literally every game.
Yeah.
And I think we need a phrase for this. I coined it an offensive assault. I personally like that, but I think we can come up with something better. Like,
yeah,
not even a Rothstein cliche. I think we just need a term for what Dayton and Pat Mahomes and the former small ball Warriors are able to put together.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it feels like. And the same thing happened against St. Bonaventure. I mean, Dayton got off to kind of a slow start. They were up by 2 points, maybe 12 minutes into the game. And next thing you know, they go into the half up 18. And it's just ridiculous. You can keep Dayton down for a little while, but... Wait, what's that? The Inferno?
If we call it the Inferno?
I don't know.
I'm spitballing here.
It's just like...
If anybody has any good ideas, send them to our Twitter.
Or, I mean, like, what do they say in NBA Jam? Just when the hoop gets on fire? I mean, is that just all you call it? I mean, they just get on fire.
Yeah, that's all it is.
It's ridiculous. That's what it feels like. It's like NBA Jam. But, yeah, so another good week for Dayton. They're 7-0. I feel like somebody's going to beat them at some point, but it just hasn't happened yet. St. Louis gave them the biggest scare, but right now... Flyers are looking really strong, and they're in the top 10, which is awesome. So
yeah, and it was looking like this week could have been the game, having to go into the paint can up in Pittsburgh and play Duquesne. And Duquesne coming off of now back-to-back losses, basically 4 straight bad games, although they straightened things out at the end against GW and pulled that one out. And they're just getting bullied in the paint now, which is absolutely not the way you want to be playing going into a game against Dayton.
No, so I think that's actually a pretty good transition. We could just move to one of our first Twitter questions we got tonight. This comes from Bonna Commenter, who asks, will mankind ever have the answer to the question, are the Dukes for real? And that's a great question because that's been such a divisive issue all year. A lot of people aren't giving Duquesne any credit for the schedule they played, but for the most part, up until last week, they took care of business. So what do you think? Are the Dukes for real right now?
I think Duquesne is exactly in the same middle spot that we tried to shoehorn them into going into January, where you had all of these Duquesne lovers who were just obsessed with the record and winning's all that matters. And then you had all the people who were staring at the strength of schedule and talking about how this team had basically just been beating a bunch of mediocre NEC squads. And it really was the whole time somewhere in the middle. They came out, they got that super impressive win against SLU, basically by just outplaying SLU at their own game. They beat Davidson, which they should have because they just out-physicaled them and they were a terrible matchup for the Wildcats. Pulled it out against GW, beat Fordham. I think I'm missing a game in the middle there. They beat St. Joe's.
St. Joe's, pretty easy game, yeah.
And then they lost to Rhode Island, which they should lose at Kingston because I still think Rhode Island's the second best team in this conference. And the UMass game basically showed us just the lack of the margin of error that Duquesne has, where without Eric Williams, without Frankie Hughes, the wings are just not capable of winning them a game. They can keep them in the game, as Lamar Norman did when they played Fordham, but there has been no moment this year in which all the wings played so well that they won the game for them. And Sincere Carey played fantastic in the first half and was the best perimeter player in that game, and it flat out didn't matter because Duquesne got their ass kicked in the post.
Yeah, that was a big surprise to me. UMass had 18 offensive rebounds, and something we talked about going back to our season previews, Duquesne was just a terrible rebounding team last year, at least defensive rebounding. They were terrible. And this year they got off to a pretty good start there against some of their weaker opponents, but now if you just look at A-10 games only, they're back to being the worst defensive rebounding team in the conference, and that's something that kind of surprises me. I thought they fixed that issue, but UMass isn't... Rhode Island, I understand it, because that's a really big team. But UMass isn't really the same as that. I mean, outside of Trey Mitchell, none of their starters are super physical, tall players that grab a bunch of offensive rebounds. And you're right, they kind of just bullied Duquesne. And I think, you know, UMass played a great game, and that was definitely their best game of the conference season. But that is kind of a concern for Duquesne coming off a pretty big loss at Kingston. I would have expected them to respond a little bit better than this.
Yeah, and by the way, I get that Trey Mitchell's a great talent and all, but the point of having Michael Hughes on a basketball court is to go up against guys like Trey Mitchell. So it's not like this is just some Davidson weak group of centers. It was incredibly surprising to see this happen. And I'm not sure what was going on with Hughes. He wasn't in foul trouble as much as he typically is in his bad games, but it wasn't just him. Basically, none of the Duquesne big men were up to their normal standards.
Yeah, and so I guess as for the question, like, are the Dukes for real? I don't think they're a top four team. So right now they're 5-2. They're tied with VCU and Richmond. They're all tied for, I guess, if it ended now, two of them would be getting a double bye. I don't really see them making it to that level just because they have kind of had an easy start to their schedule in conference season. They haven't run into Dayton yet. They haven't played VCU yet or Richmond. I definitely think they're a middle of the pack team though. I could see them finishing in the 5-7 range. And, you know, we say this about a lot of teams. I do think they are a year away. They will bring back all of their starting lineup, which is going to be huge for them. And they're still kind of a young team, even though it doesn't seem that way because they returned a lot, but they only have one senior in their rotation, Bailey Steele. They're starting a freshman in Maceo Austin, so I don't think we've seen this Duquesne team at their full potential. I guess if the question, are they for real, if that means are they a contender, then I would say no, not really. But this is still a solid team. I mean, you can't sleep on the Dukes. They're definitely better than they were last year, too.
Yeah, I mean, I have them right where I did at the beginning of the month, which is in sixth. I believe they're in that huge, massive tie for third right now. And
yeah,
I think it's pretty clear that they're not on the level of either of the teams in the city of Richmond. And I still think SLU will turn things around and they'll eventually finish up somewhere in that top five. And so I think the tier that's kind of forming right now is some sort of 6, 7, 8 between them, Bonaventure, and Davidson. And I still don't trust Davidson at all, although I'm not nearly as down on them as I was even just 2 days ago. Yeah. But I'd take Duquesne over them. And if Assun's not going to be healthy, then Duquesne's definitely better than the Bonnies. If he is, that's probably a toss-up.
Yeah, no, we definitely saw that with the Bonnies this week. They went 0-2 without Assun. So I guess, is there anything else on Duquesne, or do you want to move on? Because I think we should talk a little bit about Davidson after their 2-0 week.
No, I mean, basically, what we learned about Duquesne this week is something that I think was kind of suspected this whole time, which is they have to win the post battle to basically beat anybody. Because that's basically what happened in both of these two games. They dominated the post in the first half against Rhode Island. And I personally thought that that was the most impressive half of basketball they played this entire season. And they ended up getting blown out in that game because the whole paint dynamic shifted and Rhode Island got Langevin back in there to shut down the defensive glass. They managed to keep Weathers off the block. They got him into foul trouble on the other end. And that basically keyed everything else. And if Duquesne doesn't win the paint battle, then there's only so much Carey can do to drag them through a game, and it's not going to be enough.
Yeah, I missed that game because I was at UD Arena that night. But I was just shocked. At halftime, I think Duquesne was up 8 points. And one, I was really like excited for the Dukes. I mean, you're right, that probably was their best half of the season. But I was also kind of concerned about Rhode Island. And then I guess once Langevin got back on the court, they just really turned things around. But no, I agree. I mean, Duquesne definitely needs to control the post game more. That's something they haven't done.
It was kind of a weird half for Rhode Island. Not exactly one to get worried about, just given that they played so much of the half with Antoine Walker at center, which doesn't work against Duquesne.
No.
You can get away with that against other teams, but Harris was basically just a non-factor all night because he couldn't stay on the court, and then Langevin was out for a big chunk of the first half, so it was just a weird half for Rhode Island.
Yeah. All right, so I guess now let's move on. So you mentioned that Duquesne, St. Bonaventure, and Davidson are kind of in that middle tier right now, which I'd kind of agree. I want to talk about Davidson a little bit. So they're on a three-game winning streak. Their last three games were against Fordham, St. Louis, and George Mason. And in particular, the St. Louis game was pretty impressive. They were slight favorites, but they ended up winning that game by 12. And they really shut down St. Louis offensively, which was impressive. Do we think Davidson's turning a corner? Right now they're 10-9 overall, so they're back over 500. Is this a sign of things to come for the rest of the season? Or do you think they have no chance of reaching their true potential and making it to the top four?
I mean, this is kind of another ambiguous question like the Duquesne one.
Right.
Where, yeah, they've turned a corner in the fact that I no longer believe that there's a chance that they might fall apart and end up playing on Wednesday. Like this is,
yeah.
we can take all of the doomsday apocalyptic scenarios off the table for them because John Axel came back to life. Bob McKillop came back to life and now they're at 4-3 and they got a pretty soft schedule coming up the next five game or next six games, actually, except for at VCU.
Mm-hmm.
It should be either a 4-2 or 5-1 stretch. And yeah, I mean, they're the middle of the pack team that we thought they were. And now does that mean that they could get themselves up to maybe the sixth seed? I wouldn't bet on it, but I also wouldn't be completely stunned. But they're not getting to the top four. That ship sailed months ago. There's no way they're doing it without Frampton and Pritchett.
Yeah, no, I kind of agree. I mean, it's good for them to see them at 4-3, but their four wins in the A-10 came against St. Joe's in overtime at Fordham, and then this week, St. Louis and George Mason at home. I'm in the camp that George Mason's just terrible, so I'm not impressed by that at all. The St. Louis game's interesting because the Billikens, it seemed like they might be a team that could just bully them in the paint, but Davidson, so this is another game I unfortunately didn't get to watch, but it sounds like Davidson just completely packed the paint. They made St. Louis beat them from outside, and That's something the Billikens have struggled with, so I think that that was a good coaching move by Bob McKillop. But still, I mean, their best win is against St. Louis at home, which is kind of just average. I mean, that's another, like, upper half, middle of the pack type team that they beat on their home court. If they can beat one of the, like, VCUs or Richmond's or Rhode Island's in the conference, that would get my attention, but just based on who they played, I mean, none of their wins were really that surprising. Maybe the St. Louis one was a little bit. I mean, we definitely didn't predict that at all. But when you look back, I mean, you can kind of understand that they had a chance in that game based on the strategy they used.
Yeah, the St. Louis game was incredibly surprising to me. But if you had told me how the game was going to go from a strategy perspective, then it wouldn't have been. And this was Bob McKillop coming out and basically just teaching a masterclass in weakness manipulation. There was no subtlety, no trickery to what he did in this game. He basically could have just walked up to Travis Ford before the game, just said, okay, three guys in the paint every time on defense. That's what I'm doing. Figure it out. Figure out how you're going to beat it. Because he did that from the start. He never went away from it, which a lot of times coaches panic and they do go away from it. He didn't. He just stuck to what he had planned. And whoever the center was stood under the hoop, two wings with 1 foot in the paint on each of the blocks, and then basically just two guards running around the wings in a zone. And you would see Hassan French get the ball in the paint, and immediately there's six arms just pawing at the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And even with the crazy strength of Hassan French, he was having trouble even getting the ball to the rim. So many little taps just hitting off the front. And by the way, Davidson still didn't even rebound that great, but it didn't matter because St. Louis couldn't get putbacks through that mess of arms. And all of a sudden, as they tried to beat it and shoot corner threes, they couldn't because Tay Weaver and Javonte Perkins were the only guys who could hit a jumper on this team.
Yeah, so Perkins and Weaver actually each made 5 threes, which is really impressive for those guys. But when Jordan Goodwin and Hassan French get 6 points each, you're not going to win that many games. And it sounds like Davidson just really focused on defending St. Louis's stars, and that worked out great. And also, I want to echo what you said earlier about John Axel. He's kind of back to playing at the same level he was last year. 27 points against George Mason in his most recent game. He had 20 against St. Louis. All of a sudden, he's really taken over as the go-to guy where, compared to the beginning of the season, he had a lot of games where he just sort of disappeared at times. And his numbers aren't quite to the level they were last year when he was the MVP of the conference, but I do think that is something good for Davidson. If they can get him back to playing at a first or second team level, that can definitely win them more games. I think with Davidson's lack of depth, they kind of need him to be that guy for them to have any hope of beating a good opponent.
Oh, 100%, because the rest of this team just flat out isn't that good.
No, it's not.
They're overmatched, and they need him or Grady to be a star on a nightly basis, and they just haven't. Neither of them have shown us anything to make us believe that. Like I said earlier, I don't think there's any shot of them getting up to the top four. I don't think there's any shot of them being a bid thief.
No, but
the fact that John Axel's showing us flashes again makes me now believe that all of a sudden it could be a Friday quarterfinal and they're the sixth seed playing against VCU or Richmond. And that might not be a fun game for the favorite. I really do think that they could end up picking up a shocking, possibly resume crippling win on Friday in Brooklyn. But at the same time, they also could just have a crap game and lose to GW the night before.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I think Davidson, like with John Axel playing this well, and some of their other guys have stepped up a little bit too, but I think they've gotten to a point where they're good enough that on any given night, if John Axel and Grady just go off, they could beat anybody. But I don't see them doing that 3 or 4 times in a row. So I don't think they're going to win in Brooklyn. I really don't think they have much of a chance, but they're certainly better than they were a couple weeks ago. I mean, I think I have a higher opinion of them now than I did at the beginning of January. But overall, I mean, still, this team just, they're a pretty big disappointment. I think we've talked about that enough. But It's just too bad. I mean, I wanted to see John Axel go out better, and it looks like they're not going to make it back to the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, we can't laugh at these guys anymore. And their three losses at Duquesne, at Rhode Island, home for Richmond.
I mean, those are fine.
None of those three games are anything to be disgraced about.
No.
It's worth mentioning that they haven't lost a bad game yet. The St. Louis game was basically their matchup nightmare, but McKillop really did his best to basically just kind of exploit what SLU does. And by the way, one thing I came out of this game thinking, and it's a thought that basically lingers in my head every time SLU loses now. Like, at what point does Travis Ford just get embarrassed that he just doesn't find shooters? Like, he recruits this team like it's Wisconsin football, where they never have a quarterback who can throw the ball 14 yards down the field. Like, I get it. I love the Travis Ford mentality. I love that he goes and finds guys who want to play the system. But, like, can you just grab some shooters, please? I think this guy 6 years ago or something lost a bet in which every year he had to try to finish in dead last in the country in free throw percentage and then just see how good his team can be despite that.
I just think this team misses Gibson Jimerson so bad. I'm just looking at his stats now. He was over 40% on threes. Honestly, they might have beaten Dayton if he was healthy, because St. Louis only had two made threes in the entire game, so they really miss him. But otherwise, I mean, Demarius Jacobs is okay, I guess, but they don't have any other great shooters, and that is just such a weakness, and you can kind of expose St. Louis for that. I mean, that's what Davidson did, and it worked out for a pretty easy win.
By the way, speaking of this, can I have 30 seconds to do my new weekly rant segment?
Yeah, go ahead.
This is a new weekly segment called Why the Hell Are These Teams Not Starting One of Their Three Best Players? And so we'll start with Javonte Perkins, who is basically the only guy on SLU that can make a jump shot. He was incredible in the Dayton game against maybe the toughest defense in the A-10, just absolutely shredding them, getting the ball into the middle of the court. Their entire starting lineup is filled with non-shooters, and yet their two shooters, Perkins and Tay Weaver, both come off the bench. No idea what Travis Ford is doing on that one. And then, of course, the inspiration for this segment.
I think I know where this is going.
Can someone please seriously explain to me how Bones Highland is still coming off the bench?
Yeah.
I watched the entire St. Joe's game. Their starting five literally does not work. Like, they have five good players on that unit, all of whom had good moments in that game. All of those good moments came when it was a half starters, half bench lineup. Like, that lineup flat out just doesn't work. And I wish we had the NBA analytics to tell us, like, the unit plus minus, because the offensive rating for those five has got to be abysmal. And then all of a sudden you throw, like, Bones and Hassan Ward on the court, and it doesn't even matter which two you take off. The offense just automatically becomes better because it just has more energy and flow. They need to split up these guys.
I seriously think Bones might be the second best player on VCU. Maybe third. Marcus Santos Silva is definitely their best. And then if you said Deriante Jenkins was their second best, I'd buy that. But no one else is better than Bones Highland on that team. I'm convinced. I mean, they're just not getting enough from their other seniors. And I don't know. I mean, they definitely need to continue getting him more minutes. I mean, in the LaSalle game too, like, VCU is up 15 points with about 6 minutes to go. And this was an interesting game because there were a lot of runs on both sides. And sure enough, LaSalle went on like a 9-0 run to cut it to six. And Bones was on the bench that whole time. Then guess who checks into the game and hits a three? I mean, he's such a great player already. And he actually played pretty badly in the St. Joe's game, but still, he's just, as a freshman, I'm blown away, and he continues to just play so well. So,
and it's not even the Highland thing anymore. Like, at one point in that St. Joe's game, he was on the bench, but they had some of the other younger guys out there with Evans running point, and Evans just looked better. like, there's just not enough energy coming collectively from those four seniors, that they all just play the game in such a meticulous, careful way that the ball just dies when they're out there together. And that, I'm just going to say this over and over again until Mike Rhodes actually changes it, because this is driving me more as crazy as Charlie Brown not getting rebounds last season did. Like, I don't get how he watches that game and doesn't realize that those split lineups are better. It's just an eye test thing at this point. Like, you just got to have at least one freshman on the floor at all times just to get the energy level up.
VCU is just such an interesting team on offense, because they'll have moments in the game where they just go completely silent for like 5 minutes, and they might not score any points in that span, but then all of a sudden they'll just go on a run of draining threes. And I think you're right. They just need to do a better job of finding the right lineups, because, like, I mean, the beginning of that LaSalle game, again, when they had the five starters out there, they could not score the first few minutes of the game. And they had, like, I think before the first TV timeout, they had about three or four turnovers. And then they bring in some guys off the bench, and next thing you know, they're up by like 15 points early. So I just think it's a matter of finding guys that play well together. And I don't really know if that's the five starters that's their best lineup for VCU.
It's not. I just have seen it too many times to believe that that's what they should be moving forward.
Yeah. All right. So I guess since we're on the topic of VCU, let's move on. We got another Twitter question. This comes from Ram Nation. And I guess I should be clear. I'm referring to a Rhode Island fan here, because there's too many Rams in this conference.
So not the guy whose tweet you made A10 Talk delete?
No. No. Well, Dayton, hey, he was almost right. Dayton's ranked 7th. A10 Talk said they would be 5th, so we got close. But no, this is a different...
Neither of you understood that fight, by the way. You were arguing about whether or not they'd be top 5 the next week.
They didn't deserve to be top 5 either, though.
They weren't going to be top 5 that week.
Hey,
they might be to finish the year, but that's a different argument.
I hope so. All right, anyway, so this comes from a Rhode Island fan. He wanted us to talk about... There's a huge game coming up on Friday. VCU going on the road to play Rhode Island. He wants us to say, do you think the winner of VCU and Rhode Island will ultimately end up as the second at-large in the A-10? So I guess before we just talk about that game, we should probably talk about Rhode Island in general a little bit. So they're coming off a big week. As we mentioned, they beat Duquesne pretty badly early in the week on Wednesday, and then they came back on the road and beat St. Bonaventure. That was a really good game, by the way. So, you know, you called it. You said Rhode Island would be the second best team in this conference, and it didn't look good at first when they opened with a loss to Richmond at home. But all of a sudden, Rhode Island finds themselves on a 6-game winning streak. So what do we think? Can the Rams make that push towards second place? And by, I can't say the Rams, I mean the Rhode Island Rams. You know what I mean.
I was going to say, can we float the at-large portion of this question to next weekend, because we're so close to the band being
I want to talk about it. I'm tempted, but maybe here. All
this was purposeful. I looked at the schedule. I knew VCU Rhode Island was on January 31st.
Here,
that's why I picked February 1st for this band.
All I'm gonna say, so I won't answer the question, I guess, of if the winners can get an at-large bid. But one thing I am gonna say, so the question asked, will they end up as the second at-large bid? That implies there's only going to be two. I think we can get three still, but we don't need to go too into that. I know you're against all at-large bid talk, so I won't...
I'll say it right now. There's four that are still alive.
Yeah, I would 100% agree with that. And I think there's a good chance we get three. One of them might... definitely two, maybe three. But anyway...
Well, I still fully believe that Rhodey's going to win the A-10 tournament.
They might. They're going to have a chance. But anyway, so Rhode Island, let's just talk about them for a couple minutes. So I guess we already covered the Duquesne game a bit, where they just kind of dominated Duquesne on the glass in the second half. St. Bonaventure was a really good game. So the Rams fell behind in the first half. The Bonnies were going on a couple runs, but, you know, it was just another one of those games where St. Bonaventure was really missing Oshun Oshunyi. And Rhode Island ended up with 14 offensive rebounds. Surreal Langevine had one of his better games in the conference season. He had 11 rebounds overall and 13 points. And I'm impressed. I mean, something I noticed during Rhode Island's winning streak, and I tweeted this out on Saturday, But now they've gone at VCU and St. Bonaventure to win games, which I'd say those are two of the toughest home courts in the conference. And I think that's what comes with. They have two of the best seniors in this conference, Jeff Dowden and Cyril Bangevine. They're just a really experienced group, and I think that's something that can help them get through these difficult games.
Yeah, and one of the issues that I always have with, I guess not really Rhodey itself, but just in evaluating this team for sake of our arguments about like end of the season awards, is what is Fats Russell's true impact on winning? Because I just, I watch him and I feel like I'm watching games occasionally where he's basically just slowly destroying them. And by them, I mean his own team. And then right when I'm ready to just make some bold statement about how overrated Fats Russell is, he has the game he had against Bonaventure where he truly was the best guy on the court. And, you know, I mean, it's something I call Zach LaVine syndrome, where everyone just thinks a guy is really good because he scores a ton of points. But in reality, Zach LaVine is like the 80th best player in the NBA. Fats does not have Zach LaVine syndrome. And I've been, honestly, I've probably been trying too hard to kind of pigeonhole him into that spot. I'm not sure they win the Bonaventure game if you replace him with even just a good guard, let alone an average one. It was just another incredible display of Fats Russell with his head and his body moving in sync.
No, I agree. I mean, I don't think there's no way they win that game without him. He had 29 points. That's coming on the heels of a 23-point performance against Duquesne, too. So, huge week for Fats. And it's just remarkable how much he's improved. I mean, we've talked about this so much, but he still had a couple of those games you mentioned where he just disappeared. But for the most part, I mean, when Rhode Island needs a big shot, he's the guy that can get it. I mean, every time the Bonnies started to claw back into the game, he just nailed a three and silenced the home fans. And I just think it's amazing. He's gotten so much more disciplined out there. And he's been really efficient at a high volume, which is something we didn't see at all last year. So, no, Fats is great. And I just think, too, I don't think Rhode Island really has as many great offensive weapons as, say, Richmond. And I really do think they rely heavily on Fats to create for himself and hit those big shots. And that's exactly what he did against St. Bonaventure. That's a pretty tough defense to go up against, too. And he just, overall, I mean, it was another great game for him. He's one of the most clutch players in this conference down the stretch of games.
Yeah, he was fantastic. And while I still think their best chance of beating like a Dayton or potentially winning like a tough NCAA tournament game is for Jeff Dowden or Cyril Langevin to be the guy and Fats to just be the world's greatest number two option. When you're playing even just a simply above average team in St. Bonaventure, Fats can just take control of the game and win it on his own, which is, I don't want to say that that's what he did. Tyrese Martin was fantastic. Langevin was hitting the boards. But Fats was just clearly above and beyond dominating that game.
Yeah. Can I give you a take? Because I have something I want to say about Fats. So you might remember toward the beginning of this season, I guess like I'd say around December, there were a lot of debates on who was the better player, Fats Russell or Jacob Gilliard. I'm just going to say it. My opinion's shifted. I think it's Fats. Have you changed your mind at all, or are you still in the Gilliard camp? I don't know, man. His numbers are impressive. So right now, Fats is the leading scorer in the conference. He's barely ahead of Obi Toppin and Ryan Daly, and then they're pretty far ahead of the pack. I just think Fats, I mean, so Jacob Gilliard and Fats, they actually have very similar stats across the board, like shooting, three-point percentage, free throw percentage, assist rate, turnover rate. It's all pretty similar. The one big advantage is that Gilliard's better on two-point shots, but that's just, a lot of that's because he doesn't take nearly as many as Fats. But I kind of just feel like Fats needs to do more on offense because Richmond has so many more shooters out there, and just guys that are bigger threats to score, I think. I just feel like Fats is kind of better in that way at creating his own shots, and I think it's time, and we have to respect him, at least in terms of the season he's had. I think he's had the second-best season in the conference, and if if there wasn't a lottery pick on Dayton, I think he'd be the player of the year right now.
Yeah, I'd probably say Santos Silva's had a better year, but I get your point.
They're close. I mean, I'll at least say this. Like, a month ago when that debate first came out, I thought it was easily Gilliard. I think it's a lot closer now. I just think Fats has played that well. And outside the Richmond game, I mean, I guess, I actually don't think either of them played that well that game, but Fats in particular really disappeared against Richmond. But ever since then, I mean, he hasn't had a bad game, really. And he's just taken over as the leader for Rhode Island, which has been really exciting to see. And that's why he was on my all-fun team last week.
I just think Gilliard's better at the little stuff. And it goes back to what I was saying about this team's ceiling and how they have to play in the most important games. If I'm trying to win like a second round NCAA tournament game, I'd rather have Gilliard. If I'm trying to win a random game in January against George Mason, I would probably rather have Fats, because Fats will just put the game in his hands and just potentially win it on his own. Well, but if it comes down to needing one bucket on one possession, I'd rather have Gilliard with the ball distributing than Fats trying to score.
And I will say this too. I think both guys fit their teams pretty well, because I think for Richmond, I mean, they have other shooters like Blake Francis when he's healthy. They have Nick Sherrod, and then one of the best post scorers in Grant Golden. So they have a lot of options, and they don't really need Jacob Gilliard to be that guy that takes a ton of shots. So that's part of the reason why he doesn't average as many points. Rhode Island really needs Fast to score a lot of points, because Langevin, let's just face it, he hasn't had a good season offensively. And then Jeff Dowden, as good of a player as he is, I don't really think he fits the mold of a guy that needs to be taking 15 shots a game. And I think he's better off when he's more efficient. I mean, he should definitely shoot the ball more sometimes, but I just don't think he needs to be a gunner. And I just think because of that, with Fast being a little bit more aggressive and having higher usage, I think he just kind of fits Rhode Island's offense better. But overall, I mean, they're both great players. They're also, this was interesting, I think A10 Talk tweeted that they are both in the top 10 in steals this season across the country, which is,
they're 1 and 2 in steals per game.
Yeah, so that's pretty awesome. I mean, both of them are great on defense, which makes them a lot of fun.
And by the way, I mean, I wouldn't trade either of them for the other one.
No.
If I was their specific teams. Like, I think if you switch teams here, I think both of them would actually be worse.
And I think both teams would get worse, too.
Yeah, they absolutely would. They're both on the right squad.
Yeah.
For what they need.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, that's not a trade I would take, but just sitting around thinking about it, if there were trades in college basketball, there's a few that I think could be beneficial to some A-10 teams as we head down the stretch of this season.
All right, let's hear them.
And so I came up with 5 hypothetical A-10 trades. I wanted to hear your opinion on them.
Okay.
Most of them are small, because I really tried to think about this from the perspective of if this was real, because these guys are students. Really, if this ever actually happened in real life, you'd probably only just trade seniors who are just about on their way out.
Right.
Basically the equivalent of like an expiring contract. And so the first one that came into my head, St. Joe's trades Lorenzo Edwards to Dayton in exchange for an extra scholarship over the next 2 years. So the next 2 years, St. Joe's gets 14 and Dayton has to play with 12. Lorenzo Edwards would be a nice little replacement for Dayton for Chase Johnson. And the one potential weakness for this team is that they really don't have that much depth at the big man spot. It's just Obi Toppin and Jordy Shimunga. And it would just be nice to have another guy there in case they end up in a situation where both of their centers are in foul trouble in a tough game. Lorenzo Edwards gives you some good rim protection. He could potentially play some power forward against next to both of those guys. He stretches the floor a little bit. And he would actually be the perfect guy for the essence of this idea. Just a guy who's really good in his individual role. He's a senior, and it would be nice to get him to a contender for his final games of college basketball. For St. Joe's, they get an extra scholarship to play around with as Billy Lang's constructing this team. He gets to take a shot at another recruit.
Yeah, That's an interesting trade. I mean, I do like for Dayton that Lorenzo Edwards is a big that can stretch the floor, and he's a decent 3-point shooter, I think. So I don't know. I just think for me, like if I'm Dayton, like we're seventh in the country. I don't think you bring anyone in. I just don't think you mess with the chemistry. You just keep everything exactly how it is. Although that's an interesting trade. I mean, it makes sense for St. Joe's definitely because it is what it is. They don't have much going for them right now.
Yeah, I mean, this is like the baseball team that they're on pace to win 110 games, and at the end of July, they just go grab a backup shortstop, just in case.
Yeah.
You never know when you might need them, and they really just don't have the emergency scenario covered down low.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense, I guess. All right, what else do you have?
So my next one, more of a strategic move. Since Fordham is basically the Miami Marlins, and they're just willing to tear down at any moment, they swap out a younger guy, send Ty Perry to VCU in exchange for a scholarship over the next 3 years and two national TV games next season, get a little extra television revenue. And, you know, VCU has a lot of depth, and I found it tough to kind of find a guy for them. And, you know, Ty Perry's not the greatest defender in the world. I don't know how he would get along with Mike Rhodes' system, but he's an energy guy and a nice shooter, and I think he's somebody that in the right game could potentially give VCU's offense a boost. I'm not sure he would play a ton of minutes for the Rams because of the defensive deficiencies, but in the right moment, once again, just like with the Edwards trade idea, he's a nice break in case of emergency guy.
I don't know. No disrespect to Fordham, but I feel like they only have two players that are worth anything to any decent team, and that's Chubo Hams, who's out for the year, and then Antoine Portley, who's pretty good, but
Jalen Cobb.
Yeah, he's okay. Fordham is 344th in offensive efficiency. Are you sure you want anyone from their team? Like, no offense to those guys, but I mean, I guess Ty Perry, like, I know he had a big game against Duquesne, right? So he's had a couple big games. I mean, I know last year, too, at the beginning of the season, he made a bunch of threes. I don't know. I think VCU, I mean, they're deep enough. They have some freshmen like Trey Clark and McAllister. I mean, they have guys they could bring in if needed, so I don't know. I feel like with VCU, they have enough depth that they could survive it, where Dayton is kind of different, so they only play eight guys.
Yeah, so getting progressively a little bit bolder. Rhode Island, you've mentioned before, their one big deficiency, not only a lack of depth, but specifically the lack of a backup point guard.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, down in Virginia, Jamal Hartwell weirdly just kind of fallen out of the rotation for George Mason.
I think he's been injured, I think, the last 2 years.
Yeah,
he had
an illness.
Or he came back, though. Yeah.
Even with that, he's still playing less than 15 minutes a game at this point. And he is only a sophomore, but I still really like him as a player. And I think that he's the kind of guy that could help fix Rhode Island's depth issues at the guard position. Just give him a steady backup point guard, someone who could play 10 to 15 minutes. Just be able to give them a situation where they don't have to play Jeff Doughton 40 minutes in a game like they did on Saturday. And he's a nice backup. He has a chance to, he would have a chance to potentially become the starter next to Fats next year when Jeff Doughton graduates. And you know what? 2.5 years of team control left, you have to give up a little bit more. So in this deal, Rhode Island sends back Jeremy Stevens, the junior college transfer and the shooter who they thought was going to be eligible this year, but wasn't.
I think the problem is, wasn't that like an academic thing? Like, I don't know for sure, but he wasn't eligible, so that might be a concern.
Yeah, you're kind of taking the risk taking him on, but there's a lot of potential upside there.
I don't think George Mason should do that just because Rhode Island desperately needs a backup point guard. And Fats actually, against St. Bonaventure, he got two fouls pretty early, but he still played 35 minutes. So that would be nice, though, if they could give him more of a break. But I think George Mason, they're pretty much going to bring everybody back next year. So I feel like they just want to keep everyone around. And I agree. I think Hartwell's pretty solid. I am surprised he hasn't played as much recently. I know he missed a couple games there, but I think George Mason, they should just hold on to their guys.
So another kind of small trade, my number four deal. Richmond goes and gets Jerry Baptiste from UMass in exchange for two national TV games, basically the equivalent of just picking up a little cash for the university. And Jerry Baptiste is another guy who I think perfectly fits the essence of this idea. He's a senior. His career's about to be done. He doesn't play a ton of minutes behind Trey Mitchell. And he wouldn't play a ton of minutes behind Richmond's talented bigs like Golden and Caressi. But this team still needs some rim protection help. And just be nice to have Jerry Baptiste there available as a potential defensive stopper.
Yeah. It could. I just feel like Baptiste, like, I feel like Richmond already kind of has a guy like that with Matt Grays. Like, maybe he's not quite as good of a rim protector, but he's just another big guy that doesn't really give them anything offensively. So I'm looking at Matt Grays' stats right now. He's only made 5 shots all year, so he doesn't really shoot the ball at all. But he's a decent enough rebounder. I mean, I guess I don't know how important the national TV games would be to Richmond, but it wouldn't hurt. I feel like Richmond, though, I mean, they've got Golden and Caressi, too, so I don't know if they really need... I feel like they'd be better suited to have, like, a power forward than a true center, like Baptiste. Because they kind of have a lot of big guys already.
All right, so my final one, my big blockbuster.
Okay.
St. Joe's sends Ryan Daly to SLU for Gibson Jimerson, Tay Weaver, and an extra scholarship for the next 4 years. So St. Joe's basically just realizes this is a lost season, and even if they keep Daly next year, they might be terrible. There's also the small chance that Daly could decide to grad transfer since he did only go there for Phil Martelli in the first place. And SLU just decides that they're going all in on the next 2 years. That if they pick up Daly, it fixes their offensive problems. They have a chance to win the A-10 tournament this year. And in the senior year of Daly, Goodwin, and Hassan French, you put those three with Yuri Collins and Javonte Perkins, and that's a 5-man unit that could absolutely make the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
They got to give up a lot to do it, but St. Joe's gets Weaver to basically kind of keep their offense afloat for now. And they get 3 more years of Gibson Jimerson, which is a lot to give up.
I like that for St. Louis, I think. I was thinking Daly was a senior, but yeah, he does have 2 more years, or another full year after this. So that is a lot to give up, but I mean, they would be really good next year. I mean, can you imagine a senior core of Ryan Daly, Hassan French, and Jordan Goodwin, and Perkins too? So that would be interesting. I think they might have to do that one. I'd hate to give up Gibson Jimerson because I like him a lot too, but Daly's just such a good offensive player, and St. Louis needs a guy like that, so I think that's a good hypothetical trade.
Oh, and a bonus trade. The A-10 sends Fordham and 6 NBCSN games to the Metro.
What do we
get?
For nothing.
This is just a salary dump. They're literally just clearing space to add a 14th member.
I feel like we'd be better off just cutting it to 13. I don't know, like, I don't know who he'd add. And all those NBCSN games. I guess if you said they were stadium games and we were losing Dr. John on the mic, then maybe that would change my mind because I wouldn't want to give those up. But I don't know. I feel like the NBCSN games, those are usually pretty good. And we need a punching bag in the conference, right?
Yeah. And also, this was one that I thought of, but I just don't think either team would do it. Who would either team potentially say yes to a John Axel Goodmanson, Jacob Toppin straight up swap?
No. I think John Axel's too important to Davidson. I don't think they could do him dirty like that.
Cause that's basically Rhode Island just saying that they just want to make the tournament this year.
Yeah.
And
they'd be good
fine
with,
just wasting Fats' senior year.
Yeah. It's possible, but I don't know. Jacob Toppin, man, I wouldn't want to give up on that potential. I think he's going to be a superstar, maybe even next year. Like he's already really good for Rhode Island, and I'm still upset that Dayton didn't get him because, gosh, he's got so much talent, so much athleticism. He's already throwing down monster dunks. I like him a lot.
Yeah, so, I mean, that would basically be the Gleyber Torres for Aroldis Chapman swap.
Right.
It basically probably doesn't pay off unless you make the Sweet 16.
And I don't think... I think they can make the tournament without him. I think they got to keep their guys. but that's a good one. All right, so I guess we did get one more Twitter question. We already talked about them a little bit last week, so I don't want to spend too much, but our good friend Ryan Paleo asked us to talk about GW, and then Ghost McHistory also added, how can the other teams prepare for the mayhem GW brings? So, are we just going to talk about GW's basketball team or the Beeper King here?
Oh, man, you know, I'll save the Beeper King rants this week. God, I love 30 Rock. The biggest thing out of this for me is just Ghost McHistory's just completely jumping on the Mayhem bandwagon.
Oh, yeah, everyone's
jumping
on it. Which
has been happening for weeks now. But, I think a lot of the fans of other teams have just resisted giving into Mayhem. They haven't believed. Ghost McHistory was an early adopter.
Yeah. I'm just so disappointed. How did GW lose to Fordham? Like, they could be on a four-game winning streak right now because they just destroyed St. Joe's. I mean, they haven't played anybody, really. Or they haven't beaten anybody good in the A-10, but they're 3-4. I mean, they could definitely, like, we mentioned last week, could they be in the 8-9 game? I mean, it's possible. I would have thought better about them if they did beat Fordham, but yeah, they're okay. I mean, I like the Mayhem stuff, so keep those tweets coming, Ryan.
You know, I'll give Ryan his wish and just pretend that the GW Fordham game didn't happen because it was on a yeah. Wednesday when they scheduled 9 7 o'clock games together. Was it 9 games? Does that make sense? 11 maybe?
Yeah, sounds about right.
Come on. Can we... I get that it's a school night and we can't, like, just schedule games at 9:30. But can we just have a little bit of spread out games where basically it's just all either Tuesday at 7 or Wednesday at 7? I just want, like, 1 8 o'clock game just to switch it up. Just so I can watch a third game without taping it.
And, like, with that many games on at once, too, like, there's no chance. Like, I wasn't home that night, but if I was, like, I'm not watching that game. I mean, there's so many better ones. So, yeah, that was disappointing. I mean, I just kind of missed everything on Wednesday this week, but oh well. But, yeah, GW, 3-4, they're hanging in there. So, that's good. All right, are you ready for our final segments? You want to do Where He At?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, do you want to start off this week?
I'll let
you. Okay. So this actually, this was inspired by your interview with Sully last week because you guys were talking about some of the great A-10 teams of the past. And one of those was the 2005-2006 GW Colonials. And their coach that year was Carl Hobbs, who is one of my favorites. And I decided to spice it up. I don't think we've ever done a coach before for this. So Hobbs went 166-129 in 10 years at GW. And I thought this was super interesting. So he went to UConn, his alma mater, for a couple of years after he got fired. Right now, he is the associate head coach at the top 25 Rutgers Scarlet Knights. So I thought that's pretty awesome. Rutgers is ranked for the first time in about 40 years, and he's a part of it. So good for him. I liked him in the A-10 a lot, and it's cool to see him having some success at a big program.
So for mine, I went to a former SLU player, and this was inspired because as I was watching the Duquesne-UMass game on mute, I kept seeing the Mitchell jersey, and not the jersey of Trey Mitchell, but of their fellow point guard, of their fellow freshman, and the other Mitchell on their team, the young point guard, Colton Mitchell. And this whole time, because this is the one guy, everyone has this one guy in the league. You can never remember his name. And this whole time, I'm like, what? Why can I just not think of his first name? It's not Keith Mitchell.
He's a golfer.
Is it Quamaine Mitchell? And I just went with this for like 10 minutes, even though I knew it wasn't right. So where he at? The former St. Louis Billiken, Quamaine Mitchell. It looks like after a long stint in France, he is currently spending the year playing for Spartak Prim in Russia.
Nice.
Looks like he was playing for a team in Clermont, France for about 4 years before he went over to the Russian league.
Nice. Good stuff. Yeah, Quamaine Mitchell. I remember him for SLU. He was on those good Majerus teams, I think. And yeah, he was a good player. So nice. All right. Did you have a stat of the day tonight?
Yeah, I'll let you give yours first, though.
Okay, I was actually worried when you started bringing up UMass and Trey Mitchell, because that's exactly what my stat of the day is. So right now, Trey Mitchell is currently fifth in the A-10 in points per game. He's at 15.8. And I went back, so if he's able to keep this up, he would be the first freshman to finish the season in the top five in scoring since 2014, when John Sevier for Fordham averaged 17.3 and ended up, I believe he was the A-10 Rookie of the Year. I mean, he had to be with that many points. So we haven't seen a freshman do that in a while. And Trey Mitchell, I mean, he's honestly working his way towards some all-conference consideration. I don't know if he's going to get there just because UMass is pretty terrible, but his numbers are really good. He's definitely a future star in the conference.
Did John Sevier lead his new conference in scoring his sophomore year?
No, he stayed with Fordham actually 2 or 3 years, I think. He didn't leave as a freshman. He was there for... I remember, so he was there as a freshman, and then I think his sophomore year he got put on the bench. Like he had one good year, so he might as well have transferred because he only gave Fordham one good season. But I think he ended up at Iona, actually. So he went to the conference Fordham should be in.
All right, so my stat of the week is just a reminder to always be wary of revenge. In the midst of the mayhem yesterday, Jameer Nelson Jr. scores 22 points on 8 of 10 shooting for GW to beat St. Joe's. I don't know. I think there might be a little bit of bitterness that they fired his dad's beloved coach and then passed over his dad for the head coaching job. Shout out to Jameer Nelson Jr. scores his career high in that game. And God, St. Joe's fans should be terrified that he's just going to kill them for the next 4 years.
Yeah. And also shout out to Jameer Nelson Sr. too. I didn't know this, but he's on the CBS college basketball like studio panel. He does a good job there. I kind of felt bad for him Tuesday night because he had to talk about his alma mater losing to VCU, but he does a good job in the booth. So it looks like maybe he found a second career, and it's got to be fun for him to watch his son in the A-10. And man, yeah, he had a good game. He's had a couple really good games this year. Jameer Jr. is going to be a good player in the future, I think.
Also, shout out to Phil Martelli's wife, who she was at that game because her son is on the VCU coaching staff.
Oh, I think I missed that. You're right, yeah.
And so she was there supporting her son, and CBS cut to her 2 or 3 times, and she just looked furious the entire time. So,
oh, man.
Congratulations to St. Joe's. You have just completely infuriated everyone in the Martelli and Nelson families.
Yeah, that's not good. And St. Joe's, it's a shame. They're going to be back one of these days, but that day's not coming for a while. At least not this year. All right, any other final thoughts before we wrap this up? We're almost halfway through the season, so things are starting to get real, I'd say.
Yeah, I just want to close with this. We mentioned the Martellis and the Nelsons, and you know, they came up in the news together this week with all the stuff going on with Delonte West, and just one of the great all-time A-10 players, and also someone who has clearly just always had some stuff going on in his life. I mean, we all saw it during his NBA career, like the relationship with LeBron's mom when they were teammates. Just, you know, he's been a guy who's certainly had some rough patches in life, and really hope that he starts to do better, because, you know, this definitely wasn't his greatest week.
Yeah, I think that's well said. It's good to see a lot of people were reaching out to support him, and I just, yeah, hope he gets the help he needs, because he was just one of the most memorable players we've had in the A-10. And yeah, I mean, I just hope it's good to see guys like Jameer Nelson and Phil Martelli. I know they all reached out to him online, and just hopefully personally they're reaching out to him also.
Yep. So on a much funner note, we got a pretty fun week coming up. Dayton Duquesne on Wednesday. Maybe not a game that has quite the amount of hype that it did going into last week, but still should be super fun. Completely overshot the Battle of Richmond on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Which could really mean something for both teams come March.
I'm going to give you one more take, too, before we leave. I think Richmond's going to win that game. Is that hot?
No,
I think Richmond's going to win.
This is one where I really got to sit down and think about it because I've flipped a few times.
Yeah.
And I kind of think it's one of those games where it might just matter how much Bones actually plays.
Because
if they stick him to the bench, they're not going to be able to score enough to keep up with Richmond.
Yeah. No, I'm excited. And I will say this too, I guess. We already talked about it a little bit. Even though Richmond lost to Dayton, kind of, it wasn't super close, but I thought Richmond played pretty well most of that game. They just fell behind, but
they did. They were really bad for 8 minutes, and it killed them.
But they're a good team. I mean, I think they're gonna, both games between Richmond and VCU are gonna be great, and I'm excited for this first one. So, a lot of people are gonna be listening to this on Tuesday or Wednesday, maybe, or it could be after the game's played. But I'll just say it now: I got the Spiders in this one. I think they're gonna win.
Yeah, I'm not ready for this one yet. I'm gonna sit on some analysis as we move into the early part of the week.
Well, if the Spiders win, maybe I'll take back what I said about Gilliard, and I'll say he's better than Fats. How about that? He's gonna have to have a big game, that's for sure.
Sounds good.
Protect against that havoc. But yeah, there are some big games. The Rhode Island VCU game we mentioned too. So there's gonna be a lot of movement in the standings, and just interested to see kind of who, as we continue to move on, we're going to see some more separation. We've already started to see some teams kind of separate into tiers, but we're just going to see more of that now. And some big games, I mean, especially VCU, they have two huge games this week. And if they could win both, they'd kind of solidify themselves as the second best team. But they also could very well lose both. I mean, they're going to be challenging games for sure.
And by the way, I say this completely seriously. The Duquesne-LaSalle game on Sunday is set up time-wise so that you can watch that game, maybe get a little quick something done around the house, and have plenty of time to go pick up food before the Super Bowl starts.
Yeah, perfect.
Just want to point that out.
Good work by the A-Ton.
Yep. So, everyone, enjoy this upcoming week. Enjoy Duquesne-LaSalle being the best game in sports on Sunday afternoon. And just continue to listen to the pod. We really appreciate it. Tell a friend if you don't already follow us on Twitter. Send us your Twitter questions. We're always happy to answer them. You make our jobs easier. We don't have to think of as many topics if you send us good questions. Give us 5 stars and leave a comment on iTunes. And just send us any feedback that you have. And hope everybody enjoys this week of games.